If Winston Churchill were still running things, I wonder how he would view the sell-off by Peninsula and Oriental, their port contracts to the Dubai Ports World. Well, he might have seen to it that Britain was still running things east of Eden. But he isn't here, and that's part of the problem. You're listening to Longitude. It's Monday, February 27, 2006. I'm Darris McNeely. The hot item in the United States news is the furor over the present administration's plan to lease the management of six American ports to a group called Dubai Ports World, a group owned in part by the government of Dubai, one of the United Arab Emirates. The idea of having a company controlled by an Arab government involved in such a sensitive American business while the country fights a war on terror based in that part of the world has created a firestorm of protest. Now yesterday, February 26th, the Dubai Ports World put a hold on its acquisition of the ports, and they asked for a 45-day investigation designed to ensure that their running of the ports would not be a threat to the security of America. I believe that deal will eventually be approved and this issue will pass on. But it has exposed something. America's relations with Dubai are very important to the conduct of the terror war. To slap them in the face with denial would cause embarrassment and possible rupture of an alliance that has been critical and has been useful so far in that part of the Arab world. The Bush administration cannot afford really to let this happen. The question of security at American ports, however, is very real, and letting an Arab company be privy to the inner workings of this part of American commerce would lead to a security breach of very large proportions. But that concern seems to have been ignored or dismissed. Writing last week, one analyst, Charles Krauthammer, had this to say. He said that this deal is, quote, a fairly close call. Going on, he wrote, I can sympathize with the president's stubbornness in sticking to the deal. He is responsible for our foreign relations and believes not unreasonably that it would harm our broader national interest to reject and humiliate a moderate Middle Eastern ally by pulling the contract just because a company is run by Arabs. This contract should have stopped at an earlier age, Krauthammer continues, or at an earlier stage. But at this point, doing so would cause too much damage to our relations with moderate Arab states. There are no very good options. The best exit strategy is this. 1. Allow the contract to go through. 2. Give it heightened security or scrutiny by assigning a team of U.S. government agents to work inside the company, at least for the first few years, to make sure security is tight and information closely held. And 3. Have the team report every 6 months to both the executive and a select congressional committee. End of quote by Charles Krauthammer, who himself has some serious questions about the whole deal in itself. Now, there was another piece written by Frank Gaffney, who is an American security expert. A few days ago, he wrote this. He said that the truth of the matter is that the job of performing port security is already problematic. An arrangement that affords opportunities to put personnel and cargo in positions where they can do us harm and involves reading people into the government's port security plans who may not be on our side amounts to what lawyers call an attractive nuisance. These are opportunities that are not likely to be passed up by terrorists who have operated from the United Arab Emirates in the past. End of quote by Frank Gaffney. Well, one of the arguments for approval of this deal is what we can call the globalization of the world. Free trade is the lifeblood of the world economy. America is at the heart of this global society and depends on its ties with all the key players, that is, Arab oil, China, India, and others. To deny this deal would send a signal to the world that could be seen as isolationist and xenophobic. We want your trade, we might be saying, and we need your oil, and by the way, we want you to continue turning a blind eye to our profligate deficit spending habits. That's what might be interpreted by some. And they might just as easily reply, oh, that's so, but you don't want us in your front yard because we can't be trusted. And in a way, they may be right. And we may be right as well. Well, this is not the time to be sending mixed signals. And this is a very delicate and difficult period. The world right now is drifting into a sectarian and religious strife. Sunnis attack Shias in Iraq, raising the threat of civil war. Danish cartoons incite violent Muslim protests and the burning of embassies. And in Nigeria, Muslims kill Christians, and Christians turn right around and kill Muslims. America is the only nation, it seems, that can prevent this toxic trend from getting out of control. What it does matters more than most people may realize. Globalization is the religion of economics today. Goodwill and harmony and world peace, many feel, can be fostered among nations through free trade. The nations that depend on each other for economic prosperity will not go to war, goes this idea. Now, this is what was behind the last period of globalization that lasted from the middle of the 19th century to 1914. During that period, the world reached a level of industrial output that set the stage for the 20th century of progress. In Europe, prior to 1914, you could go across borders without passports. Goods flowed in and out of the world ports, creating a dynamism and world order that many thought would usher in a time of global peace. Many felt that there was no problem that could not be solved at that time through human ingenuity and technology and experience. Unfortunately, that world prior to 1914, that last period of globalization, and all of its hopes for peace, that world came to a fiery crash in the flames of World War I. Today's global order is only the latest attempt to bring about world peace through human economic systems. It will likely give birth to one final world economic system that the Bible calls Babylon the Great and describes with great detail in Revelation chapter 18. This global power will create a peace that will seem to be a peace, and it will seem to bring the world at that time into harmony. And yet, the reality shows from the scriptures that it will bring the world to a crisis at the close of the age. And it will be another human effort, and in this case, the final human effort to achieve world peace without God. It will fail. If you'd like to know more in depth at how this subject that I'm talking about today fits into the future of our world economy and how it will impact the future of the United States and our very welfare and livelihood, then if you haven't already done so, you need to look into the booklet that we have available, The United States and Britain in Bible Prophecy. It'll take you through the biblical and historical information that will put the United States and Britain into the proper context of world history as well as Bible prophecy. It will show you what lies ahead for our two great nations in the future of this world. You can look at that booklet on our website at ucg.org or wnponline.org, or you can also look at it, read it, and if you like, order your own copy of it to be delivered to your home. If you haven't done so, I encourage you to do so. As we look at the current tempest surrounding the Dubai ports deal, it's good to remember that and keep it into a larger perspective. It is one small piece of a larger picture that's emerging currently on the world scene. Globalization may bring economic prosperity, but it will not bring world peace among nations. For that, we must await the time of restoration of all things when Christ returns as King of Kings. For Longitude, I'm Darris McNeely. Keep listening.